Good morning, everyone. Dr. Tim O'Shea here. Thanks for tuning in. Now, in today's short presentation, we're going to take a close look at the daily numbers of reported cases, and we're going to see if we can find any legitimate, verifiable science that supports these figures. And yes, we're going to talk about the $5,000 reward to the first individual who can prove a COVID-19 diagnosis. More about that later. As far as the coronavirus phenomenon, we have 5 podcasts now at the homepage of thedoctorwithin.com, numbers 701 through 705. So please check the show notes to those podcasts, 701 to 705, which have the references that we're going to be citing throughout this presentation. So my consistent hypothesis throughout these podcasts is that the current coronavirus phenomenon is nothing more than a recategorization of cases of regular seasonal flu. So I'm going to say that again. The current coronavirus phenomenon is nothing more than a recategorization of cases of regular seasonal flu. So let's look at the science that supports that hypothesis, a notion that is being reinforced more and more every day by new events, doctors, and scientists all over the world. So in dealing with this brand new phenomenon, the coronavirus phenomenon this year, we have to see it in its historical context. During the past 15 or 20 years, we've seen many so-called epidemics spring up, and we've tracked them, and they all followed a distinct pattern. And I call these boutique epidemics. Boutique meaning man-made or contrived or not natural. Beginning with the swine flu back in 2002, the avian flu in 06, you'll remember, SARS, Ebola from 2014, the fake Disney measles campaign of 2015, Zika then in 2016, the fake flu epidemic of 2018, and then last year's non-existent measles outbreak. Now on my website, I have a chapter on each one of these boutique epidemics which you can use for reference, but we have to see the present coronavirus 19 in its historical context. All of these boutique epidemics followed a specific template or pattern. It was the same every time. First of all, they began in an exotic location. Supposedly, there was some new bug that was identified, bacteria, virus, and this was followed immediately by unrelenting press that predicted from the very beginning that this new disease was going to spread. And so we always have an indication of an agenda from the very start with all of these boutique epidemics. The next thing that happened after the unrelenting press, day in, day out, for weeks or months, prognostications of the most dire nature, all the numbers of people who are going to be infected and die. The next thing that happens every time is the emergence of salvation on the horizon. Something's going to save us. With all the past boutique epidemics, it's always been a vaccine. We're going to invent a vaccine. We're going to develop a vaccine. It's going to be produced fast enough to save everyone. The next thing that always happens is funding. As soon as the funding comes across, every single time, almost immediately, within a week, the threat vanishes into thin air, and we never hear about it again. Now, that happened 10 or 12 times in the last 15 years. I've chronicled all of them on my website, The Doctor Within, so you can look at those. So, since the last few boutique epidemics were, it was becoming an annual event, it wasn't very difficult to predict that there was going to be another one this year. And I actually made that prediction in my newsletters from last year, you can look that up, as well as in my textbook, Vaccination is Not Immunization. The pattern became so typical they were repeating it so exactly every year that it wasn't rocket science to predict that there was going to be another one in the next season. And that's exactly what happened. Now we have coronavirus 19. Where's the science? That is my constant mantra. You'll hear me repeat that over and over again when looking at this coronavirus phenomenon. Where is the science? So with this particular boutique epidemic, the trick at the very beginning was the same as usual. There were very few cases at first. So the challenge was, how do we increase the numbers? How do we increase the numbers for maximum press value, for maximum media? And this is why at the beginning of coronavirus 19 phenomenon, during the first 2 months, especially when it came into America, the daily numbers being reported were all over the map, depending on what source you were looking at, whether it was Yahoo News or Facebook or the New York Times, Washington Post, the numbers were inconsistent. They were all over the place at first. The other fact that I noticed right away with this coronavirus was that the people who were recovering from coronavirus were not being tracked or recorded or subtracted from the daily figures. Now, remember, my hypothesis is that all these cases of coronavirus that we're seeing are nothing more than recategorized cases of the seasonal flu. The symptoms of coronavirus disease are exactly the same as the seasonal flu. And one of those symptoms is that more than 99% of cases, they recover in 10 days. They're fine after 10 days. So of course that was happening and it still is happening with all the coronavirus cases that are being counted in the United States today. The problem is they never subtract the recovered cases from the overall numbers, and it's a running total. It's a running total. We're going to be looking at those figures in a minute. So what's the agenda here? The agenda is to make it look as serious as possible, as dangerous as possible, as serious a threat as possible. So for the first 2 months, remember this, there were no testing facilities. There were no testing procedures. There were no testing facilities that people could go to verify, first of all, do they have a viral disease? Secondly, did they have the same viral disease that all these other people who were sick? Did everybody have the same disease? We have no idea. Everybody was being diagnosed by symptoms only, the identical symptoms of the seasonal flu. So, for the first 2 months, there was no verifiable scientific proof of any new disease. So, the daily numbers that have been our obsession in corporate media for the last 3 months are driven by one thing, the testing. How many people have tested positive? Well, there are only a few methods of testing for COVID-19. Here they are. The first one is the most common. And remember, during the first 2 months, that's all there was. People were being diagnosed by symptoms only. The precise presentation of the seasonal flu, those are the symptoms that created this phenomenon that has brought the world to a halt. The second way of testing for COVID-19, antibody tests, blood tests looking for antibodies. Now the problem with this is that the philosophy of observing antibodies in the blood has changed 180 degrees in the last 15 years. 15 years ago, the presence of antibodies in the blood could mean that the person had just recovered from some health challenge and that their immune system had created antibodies, which was evidence of their recovery. After the influenza vaccine became added to the mandated schedule, that changed completely. Now, the presence of antibodies in the blood means that this patient is afflicted with a pathogen that is potentially fatal and is in need of some heroic treatment. So, this is the way the antibody testing for COVID-19 was conducted. They would take the blood sample. If they observed any kind of antibodies, whether they were viral or bacterial or whatever, they did not differentiate. That was a positive test for COVID-19. Any kind of unidentifiable viral or otherwise debris in the blood was also counted as a positive test. Okay, let's look at the third type of testing, the PCR, the polymerase chain reaction test. Now we're going to talk about this more in detail in a minute here. This is the test where you had to send a sputum sample into CDC, and then they would test it with the PCR test, and they would send you back the result, positive or negative. It's a completely unverifiable test, as we're going to see, and we're going to go into the specifics of why that is in a minute here. Next came the test kits. Now, the test kits were only sent out about a month ago. They were sent out actually around the middle of March. The CDC sent the new test kits to hundreds of hospitals and clinics across the country, and these test kits were supposedly to screen out people for COVID-19. The problem is, when you look on the CDC website, it says right on the description, for experimental use only, not for diagnostic purposes. For experimental use only, not for diagnostic purposes. And then it says, the CDC is making no claims for their validity. So after those test kits went out to all the hospitals about 3 weeks ago, that's when we saw this enormous spike. Because of course, right away, when the hospitals finally got a testing procedure that they didn't have to send in to, you know, Atlanta, they could report a lot more positive tests. I forgot to tell you one thing. Incidentally, before the test kits came out, CDC reported that they had only tested 2,021 cases in the entire country. 2,021 cases. Of those samples, only 49 of them were positive. And then they looked at them again, and then they changed their mind and said, only 17 of those are positive. So I document that fact in your podcast, number 704. Okay, the next thing that happened was, after those first test kits went out to the hospitals, the most recent thing that only happened a week or so ago now is the on-site test kits. And these supposedly are claiming to be able to take a sample from a patient and to screen them for COVID-19 in 5 or 10 minutes. This is completely ludicrous. It is impossible. It is scientifically untenable. These will not work at all. No one even claims that these on-site tests can validly differentiate anything, let alone COVID-19. They're completely unapproved and untested. Okay, so these are the only tests that are driving the daily numbers. These are the only tests there are for COVID-19. By symptoms only, the antibody test, the PCR, the test kits, and the new on-site test kits. That's it. Those are the only tests for COVID-19. The fact remains, none of these tests is scientifically verifiable and reproducible as a valid differentiation for COVID-19 specifically. Okay, so let's talk about the PCR a little bit more specifically here, okay? The polymerase chain reaction test was invented by Dr. Kerry Mullis from Berkeley in the early 80s. He won the Nobel Prize for inventing this test. This test is touted by the medical profession then and now as the gold standard for diagnosing microbial disease in patients. They claim that it can specifically differentiate any viral disease from any other viral disease any bacterial disease from any other by sequencing the RNA and DNA. This claim is constantly made even today, and it is completely insupportable and untrue. No one was more critical of the PCR test than its inventor, Dr. Mullis. It was disavowed from the very first. Here's what he said, quote, "Quantitative PCR is an oxymoron. PCR by its very nature is unsuited for estimating numbers. A common misimpression that the viral load tests actually count the number of viruses in the blood. These tests cannot detect free infectious viruses at all. They can only detect proteins that are believed, in some cases wrongly, to be unique to HIV. The tests can detect particles of viruses, but not viruses themselves," unquote. So you can read more about that quote in the February newsletter on my website, The Doctor Within. So here's Dr. Kerry Mullis, right? He was embarrassed, exasperated for decades about the claims that organized medicine was making for his test. It simply does not do what they claim. The amazing thing is, such extravagant claims have been made over the past 40 years for the PCR test by organized medicine that there has been no other technology developed in that entire 40 years which claims to make any improvement on the ability of the PCR test to identify and sequence viruses and bacteria. Now, there's an interesting story that I feel kind of connected to Dr. Mullis. I'll tell you this story. 2 years ago, Del Bigtree and I did a community vaccine lecture in Mendocino. And driving up there from the Bay Area, the way to get there is you go up the 101 north until you get to this Route 128 going west to the ocean, and you follow that all the way to Mendocino. Now, this is a two-lane mountain road, one of the most beautiful drives in the United States, really, and it winds through the giant redwoods, and if you're there on a sunny afternoon, you can see the sunlight filtering through the trees, and it's a very peaceful and beautiful experience, actually. So I was reading some of Dr. Mullis's early research where he was describing how the idea for the PCR occurred to him. And he tells the story of he was driving along that exact same Route 128 on the way to the ocean, and he's talking about this same elevated, very creative state of mind that he got into, a very peaceful feeling. He was describing the sunlight filtering through the pine trees, through the giant redwoods. It really struck me because I had experienced the exact same thing. So I was very upset to find out, recently I found this out, that Dr. Mullis died a couple years ago, because I would really want to interview him at this time. An interview with Kerry Mullis at this time would be extremely valuable. Okay, so let's ask this question. Where's the science? Is the polymerase chain reaction test, is it closer to science or closer to science fiction? The claims are what? That the PCR can identify the exact RNA sequence of any virus. They can observe that sequence on electron microscope, make a micrograph. They can then print that sequence out and then compare sequenced viral samples from patients, right, with that master sequence, looking for an exact matchup. And an exact matchup would determine whether it was a positive or negative test. Did this patient sample have the exact same disease as the master sample? That's what they have been claiming all these years. A little research and we find out that it does nothing of the sort. The PCR test does nothing of the sort. And yet, this is the pitch used today by whom? Everybody. Doctors, hospitals, medical journals, everyday media, TV news, the bureaucrats. Everybody is making these same false claims about this magic golden box, the polymerase chain reaction test. This is the epitome of junk science. Please don't believe me. Look at my references that are in the show notes to these podcasts, 701 to 705. Here's how the PCR test works. A DNA helix is cleaved, so it's separated, right? And then you take a section of one of those strands, and then you begin to double it, because it's very, very small. The PCR test can double it. That's what it does. Then you double the double, and on exponentially like that. And finally, something very, very tiny becomes visible, supposedly measurable. Now, of course, the coronavirus is RNA, so that has to be converted to DNA by reverse transcriptase, and that's what RT-PCR stands for. Every time they double a section of RNA, that doubling is called a cycle, okay? So they keep doing it, doubling and doubling it, cycling and cycling. The test counts how many cycles until RNA is detected, and then they keep on doubling it until the RNA disappears. And this range of numbers, that's all that the PCR test really does. It gives you a range of numbers. That's all the PCR test does. Now, you could spend a lot of time researching the science of the PCR and the electronics of it and how it works and everything, but I found a review of the literature that's going to save you a lot of time. This is by David Crowe, called Does Coronavirus Exist? You can see the URL here. You can also find it on the show notes for this podcast number 705, right? Here's a quote from that study. The coronavirus test is based on PCR, a manufacturing technique. When used as a test, it does not produce a positive or negative result, but simply the number of cycles required to detect genetic material. No new virus was ever purified. Now, purified is a specific word. It means that the virus it's isolated, it's separated from everything else, and so that it can be sequenced. So no new virus was ever purified by the Wuhan scientist. That's his notes number 2 and 3. And the same is true in America. No novel virus for COVID-19 has ever been purified or isolated by any scientist in the United States either. It's all theoretical. All they found were RNA fragments presumed to be novel to make the definitive identification. Quote, there is no way to tell that the RNA being used in the new coronavirus PCR test is found in those particles. There is no connection between the test and the particles, and no proof that the particles are viral. So this is what CDC is using to test all these samples of people that are being screened for COVID-19. They don't even know if these particles they are seeing are viral or not. So the PCR tests are meaningless. Quote, the only way is to have a gold standard for the presence of the virus, which can only be purification and characterization. This has never been accomplished for COVID-19. Just remember this, purification means the virus has been completely isolated and separated so that it can be specifically sequenced. That has never happened. I also found this peer-reviewed article that is referenced in the show notes. This is from Eurosurveillance. Doctors in Marseille, France, they tested 4,000 people, 4,000 samples for the novel coronavirus, right? Using the same PCR test, and they found not a single positive in 4,000 tests. This included 337 people who had just returned from China and 32 people with suspected coronavirus infection. So it's statistically improbable that this lab was just lucky to not get any coronavirus cases. It's more likely that they used more stringent criteria. So I guess what this means, if we in America were using the same criteria as these French doctors were using to identify coronavirus, we'd have approximately zero positive tests as well. Again, with respect to the PCR test, the tests for infections are usually reported as either positive or negative, right? In reality, even individual tests are not binary, not either positive or negative, but instead they're a range of numbers that are arbitrarily divided into positive and negative. Other factors, including the bias of the doctor or the laboratory, enter into the interpretation. So each result from a PCR test is a matter of somebody's opinion. It's arbitrary.
Does that sound like science to you?
So that's all that the PCR test does. The PCR test is merely a best guess of the quantity of RNA in a sample. That's it. It doesn't sequence, isolate, or purify any viruses. Crow also found out this fact, that hospital patients often get the PCR test every day. And he found that it's common for them to switch back and forth from day to day between positive and negative, and maybe positive again the following day, always switching back and forth. But this is impossible. If you are infected, how can you be uninfected the next day? So you see, the PCR test is meaningless as far as detecting any specific disease virus in a patient. So are you beginning to understand a little bit Dr. Mullis's exasperation all those years? The PCR test does not isolate and identify viruses. It does not provide RNA sequences of pathogens. It offers no baseline for comparison with patient samples. It cannot determine an infected from a non-infected sample. We are looking at a device for marketing and promotion of testing. Here are the conclusions. Quote, the coronavirus panic is just that, an irrational panic based on an unproven RNA test that has never been connected to a virus and which won't be connected to a virus unless the virus is purified. There is very little science here. So we started using the PCR test in the United States in February, and there were only a couple thousand cases tested at first. Remember, only 17 of those 2,000 were verified, were confirmed cases. Even those 17 positive cases, we see how unreliable they really were. So the other tests that we listed here are even less reliable than the PCR test. By symptoms only, that's a judgment call, especially when the symptoms of COVID-19 are identical to the symptoms of the flu. So this is the best kept secret. You will never hear any of this in media, or actually in Google. Google exalts the PCR to the skies.
So it's obvious that today Google has become little more than a mouthpiece for the pharmaceutical industry.
This is the gold standard of modern medicine, the polymerase chain reaction test. This is just an introduction to the problems with the PCR test. It's much worse than I'm describing here. So with respect to the test kits that were sent out to the hospitals a month ago, this is the best kept secret. You can find no research, you can find no evidence, no description of how these test kits are supposed to work. It's a forbidden topic of discussion in corporate media, right? They were released by something called the EUA, an emergency use authorization from the FDA. These were brand new tests. They were unlicensed. They were untested. They were unproven. But because of the EUA, the emergency use authorization, this allows the use of all the unproven experimental test kits. Here's what they said. I actually read this somewhere. Quote, there's no time to see if they work. Okay, so to summarize this whole phenomenon here,
these five tests
are the only thing that is driving the daily reported numbers. This is the only thing that is maintaining the level of hysteria and fear that has afflicted our country for the past couple of months. So, the tests drive the daily numbers. The daily numbers drive what? The stimulus package. We'll get back to that. So to summarize, COVID-19 is not a novel disease. Quote, COVID-19, to use its formal name, is described as a distinct new disease, but it clearly is not. This is from Crowe's Review of the Literature. This is recategorization. It's just the flu. This entire phenomenon is just the flu. But in order to make a statement like that, in order to support a statement like that, if these cases are all just the regular seasonal flu, we have to ask the question, well, how many cases of influenza are there usually in the United States every year? That information is very easy to find. On the CDC website, you can find this chart very easily. Here's what you will find. Last year in the United States, there were 35 million cases of the flu. Of those, 34,000 people died. The year before that, there were 45 million cases of the flu. Of those, 61,000 people died. The year before that, there were 29 million cases of the flu, and 38,000 people died. I actually did the arithmetic here. If there are 35 million cases of the flu, and 34,000 people died, that is less than 1/1,000th of 1% fatality. That is not a serious disease. I found this out as well. Do you know that in the hospital, if you're in the hospital and you have, say, diabetes, terminal diabetes, and lupus, and you have a couple different things, and at the very end, you get the flu,
and then you die,
the cause of death is listed as the flu. So now let's remember my hypothesis about how COVID-19 is just recategorized cases of the flu. Would that make sense? Let's compare the reported numbers of COVID-19 with these statistics here.
Here is the progression of cases of COVID-19 reported in the media during February and March.
On the 29th of February, there were only 22 confirmed cases of coronavirus 19 in the United States. 22 cases, 29 February. 2 weeks later, the numbers were supposedly up to 8,000 reported in all media. 3 days after that, it was up to 31,000 cases. 3 days later, it was 35,000 cases. By the end of the month, it was 100,000 cases.
And it continues to skyrocket up from there.
On the 22nd of March, Tony Fauci came out and made the public statement that as many as 1.7 million Americans will eventually be afflicted with COVID-19. Where did he get that number from? He pulled it out of thin air. He just made it up. Because about 9 days later, he amended that figure and he said 200,000 cases. That's about how many people could be affected by COVID-19. So you see, it's just guesswork. It's just guesswork. These figures are just being made up. Now, you can account for this sharp rise, this exponential rise in reported figures during the past month, because remember, these are when the test kits were being sent out. So now, if the hospitals in different locations, if they have their test kits, they're going to be using them. They are going to be reporting many positive tests, and all these positive tests are counted in the daily scorecard, right? But the impossible thing about this type of exponential rise is that, remember, this is not a serious disease. COVID-19, influenza, these are not serious diseases. 99% of cases are better in 10 days, remember? Even if this were the bubonic plague from the 14th century that killed hundreds of thousands of people throughout the major cities of Europe, it took like a year and a half for that to happen. This spread that we just saw is much faster, much more exponential, and they expect us to believe that this took place in 1 month. That is impossible. There's only one explanation for the spread of a disease this fast, this explosive. There's only one possible explanation for that, and that is,
it's the recategorization of a disease that's already there.
The recategorization of a disease that already exists every year, and that would be seasonal flu. It makes perfect sense. As I said before, the recovered are never subtracted from the total numbers. They're keeping a running total. As we approach 200,000 cases in the United States, even though 99% of those are fine now, they're completely better, they never subtract the recovered from the total number. It's to continue to add fuel to the fires of hysteria throughout the United States. Maximum fear value. The objective here is sell the package, sell the package. All the testing results have that same objective, sell the package. Okay, so finally, a week or so ago, we have the first stimulus package approved. What is it, $2.3 trillion now? And this is just the first phase, right? Let's look at the estimates here for how much money it was going to cost to recover from the effects of this supposed epidemic. February 29th, the estimate was $2 billion. That's what the president and Tony Fauci said it was going to take to recover from this epidemic as recently as the end of February. You can see the reference for this in the show notes to podcast 704. All right. By mid-March, that figure had quadrupled to $8 billion a year. And then by the end of March, that figure had gone up 1,000 times from the beginning to over $2 trillion. How in the world did that happen? How did that happen? Even the figures of the number of people who had supposedly died and the numbers of people who were supposedly infected could not account for this geometric rise in the amount of money that it's supposed to take in order to recover from it. Again, this is driven by the daily numbers. Now remember, mid-March when it was $8 billion estimate, that was right before the 16th of March. The 16th of March, that was the day that they started imprisoning us in our own homes. You know, that was the lockdown started on the 16th of March. And everybody obeyed. Everybody obeyed, right? So now the agenda is to inflate the numbers, create hysteria, make this the worst threat to humanity since the bubonic plague, right? And so the numbers are going up. Up and up, and it's completely unreasonable, as we will see. So I got this idea from Dr. Shiva. I completely recommend that everybody look at the YouTube videos of Dr. Shiva. Here's what he says. This was an opportunity unprecedented in the history of mankind, right, for money to be transferred from the people who work to the people who do not work in this country. That's Dr. Shiva. Please watch that. It's hard to disprove that notion. Now, after the $2 trillion was approved, and you're wondering, why do we need all this money? This information began to appear in corporate media. All the different riders who are hopping aboard the money train, all the different factions that were claiming pieces of this enormous pie. What I say in one of my podcasts is, you had me at Performing Arts Center.
So here's just a partial list of the special interest groups that came out of nowhere with outstretched hands as soon as the stimulus package was passed.
Millions were dispersed to fast-track the FDA approval of sunscreens. $150 million was allotted for performing arts centers and museums. What does that have to do with coronavirus? CEOs were limited to doubling their 2019 compensations. $58 billion went to the airlines, $17 billion of which to Boeing. What does that have to do with an epidemic. Tax credits for wind and solar power. Millions went to the labor unions. The voting by mail program got millions. $11 billion went for African banks. $10.5 billion went to the Defense Department. I mean, didn't we just double their budget like 3 years ago? We have the largest military in the entire world. Number two in the entire world, we're like 26 times bigger than them. Did they really need another $10 billion out of this epidemic fund? And of course, the post office, they were in there for their cut. Millions of dollars to the U.S. Post Office as well. So at this point, if you're paying any attention at all,
take a break from watching the continuous flow of lies and propaganda on all the news programs. And instead,
look at the sources, look at the references that I'm listing here on the podcast show notes. It is so obvious, anybody can see this. Science is no longer a consideration. Science is not driving the bus. What is driving the bus now is politics. Whatever happens from here on out has nothing to do with people getting sick, with people getting vaccines, with people recovering. This only has to do with political groups who are out for their own ends, who are trying to recover as much of the stimulus package for their own special interest groups as possible. Where's the science? Where's the science that the total damage to humanity from the coronavirus phenomenon will ultimately be worse than the extravagant policies of governments everywhere? The cure is much worse than the disease itself ever was. We are now destroying entire economies and social orders. We are imprisoning populations in their own homes all over the world, and all with the claim to be protecting people from a disease that has never been definitively proven to exist. Here's what Kennedy said a long time ago. The great enemy of the truth is very often not the lie, deliberate, contrived, and dishonest, but the myth, persistent, persuasive, and unrealistic. So here are the references at thedoctorwithin.com. Click on podcasts. 701 to 705, go to the show notes, look at my newsletters in February, March, and April. Yes, it's true. We are offering a $5,000 reward to the first individual who can prove a diagnosis of COVID-19. This doesn't mean that you show a piece of paper with a positive diagnosis from your local hospital who wrote down your symptoms and took your temperature. That's not it. There are specific criteria you must provide. Here they are.
You must have authentic, original documents proving that your sample contained a purified virus that was an identical matchup with the authenticated, purified COVID-19 virus that originated in Wuhan. The sequencing of your sample with the Wuhan version must be transparent and incontrovertible. Actually, this is the minimum that must be done to make a definitive diagnosis of anyone for COVID-19.
There is no evidence, number one, that there is any novel disease in the world at this time called COVID-19, and there is definitely no proof, verifiable scientific proof, that all these people who are being counted as positive and as carriers and as infected people, that all these people have the exact same illness. There is no evidence for that whatsoever. Let's talk about socially, spiritually, geopolitically, what's really happened to the world here, and what's the worst consequence of everything that's happened to us.
So the worst thing that has happened is not just that
we've been tricked by yet another boutique epidemic, or all the time and energy that has been wasted on this phenomenon, or the millions lost in stock market decline, or the millions lost in productivity and salaries, all the people who lost their jobs, all the businesses that have closed, or all the unnecessary stress, or all the trauma that there's been to families and isolating the population from each other. All these are horrific consequences, but they're not the worst of all.
No, the worst consequence of all of this, in my opinion, and the very nadir of the American experience so far, is this.
That they told everybody what to do on TV to stay home indefinitely, and we all did it with no opposition. I say in my podcast 704, think of Mussolini, Hitler, Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan, any of the tyrants in world history.
They would have given their right arm for a weapon like this. The conquest and subjugation of a population without firing a shot, without an invading army, without any personal risk whatsoever. That new weapon is called technocracy, rule by smartphone. A further horror is that now that this program of domination went off so easily, without a hitch, with virtually no opposition, the bureaucrats know that they can do it again anytime they want. In fact, just a few days ago, Tony Fauci actually made the diabolically ridiculous prediction that we could expect a similar coronavirus epidemic every year from now on. Did you see that? Politics eclipses science. Now, we don't have to follow along with all this systematic insanity, a world gone mad. No, we have an option, a way out. Just think if everyone would pull themselves away from the incessant news machine for a minute and start informing themselves about the utter lack of science supporting any new disease, any epidemic. We could all open our doors, get in our cars, open our businesses, and all go back to work. And there would be nothing the 1% could do about it. They just don't have enough Gestapo for that. Just daydreaming here, right? But how could a revolutionary enlightenment like that actually crystallize throughout our population the way it is now? What would it take? A leader. This is the time for a real leader to emerge.
You've heard the term nanny state. We know that some people want to have their life doled out to them, right? They want to be spoon-fed their education. They want to be told who their enemies are. They want to trade freedom for the illusion of security. So they're fine with the nanny state. The nanny state administers its permission to live and permission to die. And a lot of people accept this. They're fine with this. Whatever happened to the concept of consent of the governed? What happened to that principle? So many people in this country today believe that bureaucrats know more about how to live your life, define your health, raise your kids than you do. They believe that government exists to protect us from each other. We don't need anyone to protect us from ourselves. We can do that just fine without any help. Here's a quote from Hermann Goering from Nuremberg, right? Here's what he said. It is the leaders of the country who determine the policy, and it is always a simple matter to drag the people along. Whether it's a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship, voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That is easy. All you have to do is tell them they're being attacked. It works the same in any country. That's a quote from Hermann Goering before being sentenced to death at Nuremberg. There's so much confusion about what's going to happen. So much fear, so much hysteria, so many conflicting ideas online, especially in corporate news. Stop watching corporate news. You can learn so much just from word on the street. Up until a couple weeks ago, remember, everybody knew that what? that on Easter Sunday, President Trump was going to rise from the dead and he was going to take all of us with him. Remember when we were all expecting that? And then a week before that was supposed to take place, it got extended. Wait just two more weeks.
All the special interest groups had not yet demonstrated how each one of them was going to save us from this horrific epidemic and therefore claim their share of the stimulus package. So we have to wait now till all these groups get a chance to demonstrate that.
But I learned this in the past few days. I learned this incredible thing. It started with a discussion I was having from a doctor, a friend of mine in Sacramento. And he had many friends who were nurses. And he was finding out an amazing thing. Among all of them, they worked at four different hospitals, these nurses, and they all said the same thing. They said, we really don't understand what's going on here. Our emergency rooms are virtually empty. Our ICUs are empty. We have only a couple people who have been diagnosed with COVID-19, and most of them haven't even been tested yet. And so then we started encouraging them to call their friends, and we started asking people to ask other nurses that they knew or people who had been in the hospital. And pretty soon we found out 12 hospitals that we knew of in California
that were reporting the exact same situation.
Nobody in their ICUs. Nobody in their emergency rooms. You're wondering about this. We all thought this was supposed to be the worst epidemic in human history. There's supposed to be thousands of people, you know, beating down the doors of all the hospitals, you know, setting up hospital beds in the parking lot. Remember all this hysteria? And now, where are the patients? Where are the patients from this epidemic? Where are they? So then I went on YouTube. And I was asking the same question, where are the sick people? What epidemic? What sick people? So I want everyone to do the same thing I'm doing. YouTube search this phrase, empty hospitals. That's all you have to do. And dozens of these clips will come up right away. People asking the same question, where is the epidemic? There was one I just watched yesterday, said the same thing was true in California, Colorado, and Washington State. The hospitals were virtually empty with just a few people who had been diagnosed coronavirus.
Now, the one story that they keep repeating over and over again in corporate media is a story about the New York hospitals that are supposedly so overcrowded that they have hospital beds out in the parking lot and all that. But I was talking to some people in New York just yesterday, and they said they didn't know anything about that because the hospitals that they knew were generally the same way. They were empty. The emergency rooms were empty. The ICUs were empty. And so I was thinking it may be like this in the entire United States, and now we wouldn't really know it. And the reason for that is most hospitals have adopted the policy that you can't even walk into the hospital. You have to sit out in the parking lot and call in, and then they come out and decide whether you should be allowed to come into the hospital or not. So my opinion is this is a whole area that needs to be exposed. It needs a lot more legitimate, verified research. One place you can at least begin doing that is on YouTube, and start by YouTube searching the phrase empty hospitals. It's almost like this whole thing backfired on the hospitals, you know what I'm saying? It's like people are so afraid to go out that they're actually afraid to go to the hospital even because they're afraid they're going to be exposed to this imaginary coronavirus.
I was talking to my friend in New York yesterday, and he was telling me about there's a Jewish, predominantly Jewish section of New York, and in their hospital, there were like 13 different cases of people who had suspected coronavirus. Only half of them had been tested. But the ones who hadn't been tested, when a few of them died, even though they hadn't been tested, they counted their deaths as COVID-19. I'm sure that this is the same policy across the United States. These figures that they're reporting of all the people who died, many of these people have not been tested. But even if they have been tested and they were positive and they did die, number one, they probably had underlying diseases already other illnesses. Number two, they were probably the elderly, just like people who die every year from the flu. So follow this up, do some homework. YouTube search this idea, empty hospitals. Try to find real evidence of sick and dying people. Why are all these masks and ventilators being contracted for, millions of dollars being spent? I saw the story yesterday, did you see this, where Newsom in California, he just spent $39 million for how many million boxes of masks for people, and now they can't find where that money went, and there's some kind of boondoggle going on. How long will this last? That's the big question. Everybody's asking that. There's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of hysteria. You ask 10 different people, you'll get 10 different answers. But here's a reasonable answer to how long will it last. Now that we are in house arrest, the people who are in control of when do we get out of, you know, self-incarceration, they're really in no hurry. We're under control. So here's how long it will last. It will last as long as it takes all the feeders at the $2 trillion trough each to demonstrate why their group should get a certain proportion of the $2 trillion stimulus package. That's how long it's going to take. So each particular group will demonstrate how they are, quote, saving us, why they are essential. I found out that only a week ago, Ford and GE got a huge contract to produce 50,000 ventilators. They said it's going to take them 3 months to produce those, but the money got spent anyway. This is your note number 6. So there's a huge amount of corruption that is very obvious if you just do a little research. My prediction is this. In the coming months, the fraudulence of the coronavirus boutique epidemic will be substantiated more and more, both scientifically and politically. This is already happening by many scientists and specialists and doctors. A lot of people who are really in positions to know can demonstrate very clearly that there is no novel disease pervading the entire world. There is no new virus. Am I smarter than all of media? Well, I would certainly hope that anyone who does the slightest bit of research that's just below the level of the, you know, corporate media propaganda, anybody who goes to the second level and, for example, follows up with some of the references that are in the show notes to these podcasts and see how long you will maintain your belief that there is a brand new viral disease sweeping the world. There are many, many doctors who are documenting the ideas that I'm putting forth here. People who have much more credentials than I have, people who are much better scientists and researchers than I am. One of these is Dr. Shiva. This is a brilliant MIT PhD. He gives another level of science to corroborate a lot of the ideas that we've been discussing in this presentation. Andrew Kaufman, MD, has some great videos on YouTube. Please watch those. Dr. Stefan Lanka, watch his videos on YouTube as well. This is an article. It's called 12 Experts Questioning the Coronavirus Panic. 12 Experts Questioning the Coronavirus Panic. These are all medical doctors with years and years of clinical experience. The links for all these are in the show notes of podcast 701 to 705. Okay, so you have homework to do, right? Check these sources. Don't believe a word I say, but check these sources for yourself. I've brought up some very disconcerting challenges. Either I'm completely wrong, or else you have a lot of studying to do. So stop wasting your time watching stupid TV and getting brainwashed even more and more by the repetitious loops of the unscientific indoctrination that's oozing out of your TV. The website, The Doctor Within, just click on podcast on the homepage. So I want to end this part of the presentation with this question. Before the coronavirus phenomenon ever occurred, several months ago, how much faith did you have in everyday corporate media? How much did you really believe the day-to-day stories? Did you really have that much faith in them? Did you really believe everything that they said every day? If you had some doubts at that time, why would you believe the media any more than you used to with this new phenomenon, coronavirus 19?